and welcome to this podcast, this episode with me, Yvonne Halling, bedandbreakfastcoach.com, where we help owners, B&B owners, innkeepers, and small independent hotel owners worldwide to increase their business by at least 25% in one season while paying less commissions to online travel agents and having more fun. Today, I'd like to welcome Chris McDonough, Head of Partnership at Stuart Hindley & Partners, who operate throughout the UK, serving the financial needs predominantly of new-to-trade operators wishing to embark on a hospitality business lifestyle choice, as well as seasoned operators looking for debt to expand or refinance their existing commitments. Chris has unrivaled experience in the hospitality and leisure sectors, having been there and done it by purchasing as a new-to-trade operator the Queen's Arms Country Inn back in 2003, and after selling the concern in 2008 at the height of the financial crisis, started up Stuart Hindley & Partners with the aim of helping new-to-trade operators acquire finance to assist with the purchase of B&Bs, guest houses and independent hotels in the UK. Not many brokers, if any, have this sector experience, and we're here today to explore with Chris how you can acquire the finance you need, but also how to purchase a B&B business that will meet the bank's lending criteria. So welcome, Chris. I'm really happy that you're here to help my audience today.
Thank you, Yvonne. It's an absolute pleasure, and I hope I can bring some value to it as well.
I'm sure you will. So let's start with the first question. So if I'm an owner and if I'm a prospective owner and I'm considering buying a hotel or B&B in the UK, how much can I borrow?
That's dependent upon your own personal circumstances and those of the concern that you're buying, principally the concern that you're buying. Clearly, a lender would want to see a business that produces a trading profit that can service the debt. So they do restrict the amount of debt. They won't lend 100%. And the maximum debt available on a commercial mortgage would be between 65 and 70% of the purchase price, or indeed the valuation, whichever the lower is.
Okay, so is it always, this is just as an aside here, is it always a good idea to get a commercial mortgage, or is sometimes a personal mortgage better?
No, it would have to be a commercial mortgage, Yvonne, because okay, you are operating a commercial business, although it might be in the form of residential property. And a lot of B&Bs and guest houses, for that matter, are in former large residential properties. So those properties that trade as a guest house or a bed and breakfast have gone through the planning application for change of use. They no longer pay council tax, they pay business rates. So the mortgage in every instance would have to be a commercial mortgage. And it's also worth pointing out that if the owners occupy more than 40% of the entire footprint of the building, then that would be deemed as a regulated commercial mortgage. There's a slight difference, but the lending criteria is much the same, up to, as I mentioned previously, 65 to 70%.
Great, thank you. So how do I know whether I would qualify for a commercial loan?
Well, in the first instance, what we'd like to see would be the sales particulars of the concern that the prospective purchaser wishes to buy, and importantly, the trading accounts. And unfortunately, the trading accounts aren't always readily available before you view. It's most sales agents' policy to actually have you view the premises, first of all, and then if you show intent or willingness to buy, then they release the sales figures, which are essentially the trading accounts. It's a bit of a strange way of going about things, because if the business doesn't produce a profit, there's very little point in actually the prospective purchaser going to see it. But we can generally tell from the profile of business and the headline net revenue figure that's listed on the sales particulars what that business should be converting at revenue to profit. And typically for a standard guest house or B&B, that should be between 45 and 55% of net turnover.
That's brilliant. Thank you. So a lot of people get into this industry, I've certainly noticed this in my Facebook group, as a retirement project or a later life project. Is age an issue when applying for finance?
It can be. Most lenders go to a maximum age at the expiry of the term of debt to 75. So ideally, if it's a 15-year term, you have to apply when you're 60. However, we are able to actually provide a solution for that, whereby a succession plan would be presented to the lender. So if the prospective borrowers or purchasers of the guest house and the B&B have a succession plan whereby they hand off the asset and the debt to their offspring or other nominated family members, then that works as well. It's just that the lender wants comfort that the debt can be serviced during your own lifetime more than anything else. And as people are getting a little bit older and continuing to work, you know, in the industry, some lenders will go out to 80 years of age. So the demographic is changing, retirement age has gone up, and as a consequence of that, lenders are extending their age requirement as well.
That's interesting, isn't it? So if I was new to this industry, I didn't have any previous experience of hospitality, do I need that when I'm applying for finance to buy a new property or new business?
Not necessarily. I mean, in most instances, the general profile, people will come to us at the age of 50 or 55. Mm. Lenders will invariably offer a term of debt that meets their serviceability criteria. So the longer the term of the debt, the longer the term of debt, the more likelihood it's readily serviceable. So at 15 years, it might be, a difficult scenario to service, particularly when they stress test the interest rates as well. But over 25 years, it makes it more affordable and, it meets the debt servicing requirement, because although interest rates have recently shown an increase, it's still relatively cheap money. But the upshot is most lenders will stress test at 10%, a notional 10%. And if the business can actually afford to pay that loan on a full repayment basis, not interest only, but capital and interest repayments from the trading profit after the owner's drawings, then generally speaking, there's a deal to be done.
10% interest?
Yes.
Wow, okay. So they really are quite conservative then. I mean, interest rates haven't been at 10% for years, has it? Not to say they won't go there, but they haven't been that high for a long time.
No. Well, let's hope they don't go to 10%. I remember back in the day, 7% was seen to be very competitive.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we've all had the benefit of relatively cheap interest rates and cheap money since the financial crash of 2008. Reality starting to click in. So I always say to my clients, or our clients in general, it's not about borrowing the money, it's about managing the lender's risk. Mm. So what if the business failed? What if it didn't achieve its historic trade? Mm. What if projections aren't met? So it's a little bit of a dark art in terms of how we position any debt application, because it's a twofold presentation. One is on the background of the potential purchasers, the borrower. What's their account conduct like? Do they have a good credit score? What relevant experience can they bring to it? They may not necessarily have trade experience, but if they have affiliated experience in terms of managing the business, clearly that's going to help.
Transferable skills, right?
That's the word I was looking for, transferable skills. Mm. And then, of course, the lender will look to the business, how it's been traded. Now, in a lot of the smaller businesses, they deliberately trade below the VAT threshold, which is £85,000. And some of the money that comes in or income is possibly diverted elsewhere. That can cause a bit of a challenge in terms of the trading profit and the trading profit being used to service the debt. But lenders are mindful of this, and they do appreciate it's a lifestyle business. So getting back to the point I mentioned earlier, if the figures quoted on the P&L can service the debt, generally there's a deal to be done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, a lot of them do trade below 85, keep the income below 85,000. And then there's always the cash as well. I mean, let's be honest, there's a bit of cash in this business.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's a double-edged sword, isn't it, really? I mean, you keep your VAT low, you keep your income low under the VAT threshold, but if you want to sell it, and you're not showing much profit, then you're going to lose out in the long run. So I think it needs a bit of long-term thinking, doesn't it, really? If you plan to sell, then you've got to get your income up, I think.
Absolutely.
To get the most money for your business. And then you've got a viable business to sell. Otherwise, if you're not, declaring anything over above 85,000, then the business could be seen to be operating poorly, and therefore it's not going to be that saleable. I mean, what's your view on that?
Yeah, this is a bit of a dilemma, really. What we see an awful lot of, particularly with the smaller concerns, is that the owner, the operator, they say, we want to retire now. So automatically they take the foot off the pedal, and it might take 18 months or 2 years to actually sell a concern. And most of the concerns that we see are extremely well presented, they're extremely lucrative, they provide a good standard of living for the owner-operator. But when the owner-operator comes to sell, you know, they go, we're going to retire now, we're going to put it on the market. And in that intervening period, what happens is the revenue drops off, as a consequence, the trading profit drops off. Yeah. So then we take the view that it could be projection-led, you know, based on industry norms. And that's why the lenders always want to see the last 3 years of trading profit, because that's an indicator as to how the business has performed historically. As most lenders don't like projection-led lending, particularly for new-to-trade operators, then they always defer to the last 3 years. Now, currently, that presents a problem because we've had the pandemic and the trade has not been representative. And if anything, some of these guest houses and B&Bs have done exceptionally well because of the staycation market. And as a consequence, vendors are saying, well, my business is worth now a lot more because I've had, you know, a big increase in revenue, my occupancy's gone up, and I've had, you know, the benefit of the VAT reduction if they are actually registered for VAT. At one point it was 5%, then it went back up to 12.5% before going back to 20%. Mm-hmm. And that money didn't go off the price per room, it went straight to the bottom line. Mm. So most lenders will consider trading accounts to year end March 2020, the last 3 years to that date as being representative for the purposes of debt serviceability.
Mm. Okay, and does the type of business or property have a bearing on how much I could borrow, for example? Is it easier to get money for a smaller property or a larger property in your experience?
No, if you're borrowing £200,000 or £2 million, the harder deal would be the £200,000 deal.
Interesting. Because,
yeah, it's a marginal business. There's not a huge amount of revenue. And whilst it's not subject to the variances that a large business might have, even a slight change would actually affect the trade and the trading profit and the debt serviceability. What lenders like to see are what we call non-complex businesses. And when I say that, that's a business that doesn't involve a food and beverage element. And people, particularly for the larger guest houses and B&Bs and the smaller hotels, say, I really want to get into food and beverage. You know, that's my thing. Well, that's the most complicated aspect. A, it involves chefs and the complexities surrounding chefs and staffing and the vagaries of the trade. If you come into a bank or we present a case to a bank that only has an accommodation element, then that's fairly straightforward. And if it's marketed well, presented well, and you get good reviews, then the business should perform to industry norms and the lender would feel more satisfied with that because there's less risk than it would be for a full service concept. We've got a food and beverage element as well with the incumbent costs.
Interesting. That's very interesting. Because food and beverage can be very lucrative in a small operation. But from what you're saying is that it won't give you an advantage in terms of what the lender looks at.
No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm.
It's just further too complex.
It is, particularly for a new-to-trade operator. Mm. But moreover, you know, you have to ask yourself, why would you want to be tied to a business on a breakfast and dinner basis? Whereas if you're not providing dinner or an evening meal, then by 10 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock, you've finished the work for the day. You then check guests in at, say, from 4 o'clock onwards. If you then have to, to resort to providing a dinner service as well, you might not finish up until 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And it takes away the whole lifestyle elements of the business, really.
Yes, I have another view on that, but this is not the place.
It's horses for courses, absolutely.
Absolutely, horses for courses, absolutely is. So what's a typical loan profile, Chris?
Loan profile, in terms of term, we would say for a B&B, I would say 20 years, possibly 25 years. There may well be an interest-only period for the first 12 months. That would be dependent upon the lender. In the current market, it's difficult to predict what the interest rates will be because bank rate is going up. But how the lenders offer a rate, it comprises two elements. One is the Bank of England base rate, then they have their margin. So the margin for a B&B might be 2.5% to 3%. So that would be then added to the Bank of England or prevailing Bank of England base rate. And combined, you know, the combination of the two would be called the pay rate. So that's how, you know, the debt is actually offered. So it would be on an interest-only basis, say, for the first 12 months, followed by capital and interest payments for the remainder of the term.
Is there any stamp duty?
Yes, stamp duty is different to residential. Mm. And most people have got access to a PC in the web. They can just go on the government's website. Now, stamp duty is a little bit of a grey area in terms of what is actually payable. And there's a thing called apportionment. And the apportionment means that there's an element of trade goodwill and also fixtures and fittings. And generally speaking, an agreement is reached between the vendor and the purchaser as to what the apportionment might be. It is a bit of a complex area, but typically if you bought a business, say, for £750,000, one could arguably say that £50,000 could be apportioned to goodwill and fixtures and fittings. Now, it will vary, it might be higher, it might be lower, and it's generally driven by what the fixtures and fittings, what value they have on the balance sheet, and if they're sold at a profit, then the vendor would pay tax on the difference between the two. And it's corporation tax that would be, or is it capital gains? I can never remember.
But capital it's gains, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. But again, you know, we can advise on that. We have a firm of chartered accountants that are associated with us, and they're pretty good at minimising the stamp duty liability.
Yeah, yes, absolutely, yeah. So how long does it take to arrange a commercial mortgage?
Well, it's always a bit of a bone of contention. In theory, it should be a relatively straightforward process, but it can take up to 12 weeks. And if we're instructed to raise the debt for somebody, the work commences. It takes generally 2 weeks to get the our client's paperwork together, and it's quite comprehensive. We do a lot of the due diligence on behalf of the lender. Because we're FCA approved as well, you know, we have the remit to be able to do that. So we'd want to see personal and business bank statements, full statement of assets and liabilities, income expenditure, credit reports. They would draw their own credit report. We have the means to do that, but we would leave a footprint, which is not ideal. Proof of address, driver's licenses, ID, and so it goes on pay slips if there's going to be a recurring income in the background, bank statements for the last 6 months. And the lenders will look at the bank statements to see that the prospective borrower, their customer, has got good account conduct. What lenders don't want to see are spurious transactions, gambling being one of them in this broader sense of going to the bookies regularly, because everything now is all done by a debit card. So you know, any prospective borrower needs to ensure that there's no excessive gambling, you know, transactions. They'll say, well, if it becomes a habit, they might spend the money and not pay our debt. So that's the reason they look at that. Now, in the same way that residential mortgage providers look at what your expenditure is, what's necessary, what is discretionary, you know, to ensure
what kind of things you buy, what kind of things you spend money on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do all that. Then we present a loan proposal or a debt proposal, which can take up to 2 weeks. It's then presented to the bank. They will consider another 2 weeks. And if they like it, which invariably they do, because we won't take on anything that's not doable, because we go through the whole rationale about, are the applicants of good standing? Can the business sustain the debt? Is the business sustainable going forward? Is the firm maintainable trade and firm maintainable profit? If all those boxes are ticked, then we go to the debt application. Mm. If the lender likes the deal, it's sanctioned and subject to valuation. The bank has to instruct the valuation. It can't be done arbitrarily or independently. And that takes 4 weeks for instructions to the report. Report goes back into credit, and then the formal offer is issued. It's then down to legals. And what we do advise is that people who embark on the process get their solicitor to undertake title searches, first of all. It's at relatively low cost, but where all the sticking points tend to arise are disputes on title. Oh, there's a piece of land here that's not included in the title, but we have access to. It's a right of way. Mm. You'll be, you know, be amazed at how long these matters can take to resolve. Mm. HM Land Registry aren't the quickest, you know, in terms of coming back.
Which kind of lenders do you work with? And do they, right now, do they have an appetite for hospitality lending?
Well, without giving away the golden egg, right. We work with all the lenders, and they all have varying levels of appetite. Some are in it, and they go, it's not for us anymore, it seems to be too high risk, so they actually withdraw from the market, not withdrawing their product. So they might not have appetite for hospitality, but they would have appetite for commercial. And then they come back into the market when, you know, circumstances change. But typically, we've got a raft of lenders. I would say between 4 and 5 prime lenders. We have, you know, second tier lenders, and then we have recourse to bridging lenders, and they are more expensive, but we call it opportunity cost. It allows you to actually get in there quickly, particularly if your own personal circumstances or those of the borrower or indeed the business they're acquiring don't conform. And then we refinance that after 18 months, 24 months, once, you know, 2 years of trading accounts have been presented.
So a lot of people that come into my Facebook group, this is where I first meet them often, and they are considering, you know, they want to buy a B&B property and the spouse has an external job. Yep. And they will be carrying on with that job. Would lenders accept like a background income to help with the loan repayments, or is it all based on what the business does?
A background income provides a comfort blanket for the lender, right. Because they know that firstly, there's not a requirement for 2 sets of drawings, which obviously equates to a higher trading profit. And it's also a very good fallback, particularly at the smaller end of the market, whereby, you know, a spouse's income may well cover the mortgage repayments. So why wouldn't the lender have that in the background? But their lending is solely based on the performance of the business. Can it actually service the debt? If it can't, the answer is no, even though there might be an income in the background. Now, there is a little bit of a grey area there, because if you're taking on something that doesn't quite meet criteria, and we can convince the lender to undertake a level of projection-led lending, or to consider a level of projection-led lending, and there's an income in the background, then that makes for a stronger case. So it is every lender's discretion, but they don't have... All of them don't have the same policy, but they all act in the same way.
I guess they take it like on a case-by-case basis in that regard.
It is very much case-by-case, Yvonne. I mean, if you go to the residential market, which clearly you can't fund the B&B or guest house with, but it's a product, and it is what it is. Mm. With commercial lending, everything is bespoke. It's considered individually. There's generally a meeting with the lender as well once the initial application has been approved. And they can be very flexible, and there are varying degrees of flexibility from the loan to value, from the term to interest only. Perhaps seasonal rates might apply. So if it's a very seasonal business, let's say it's in a summer resort, then you could have a high repayment profile in the summer and a lower one in the off season, or indeed no payments at all. So again, it's lender dependent. And there are some lenders who specialize in hospitality and are geographical in terms of their lending as well. But, you know, as brokers, we operate nationwide, so we cover the whole gambit of lenders, you know, from Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. We've even done deals in the Caribbean. If you've got any potential viewers who are interested in buying something in the Caribbean, Barbados is a speciality, we'd be delighted to help.
Wow, that's very interesting to know. So what if, for example, the business that I'm considering buying, the B&B or the hotel that I'm considering buying, doesn't have any trading accounts? How will that affect my chance of getting a loan?
that is one of our more challenging debt raisings, really. If you're a new to trade operator and there's no business trading accounts, it's effectively a startup. To get a term debt solution would be nigh on impossible. So what we have to do is we would have a recourse to bridging finance, as I mentioned early on. And they lend off closed values. So if you're buying a potential business, or you're buying a building that you're going to convert to a guest house or a hotel, it's bridging finance that would actually meet that criteria. And they will go to 70% of the purchase price or the valuation. But that would be a big struggle to get off the ground, because the loan interest would be deducted from the loan advance, because it gives the lender further security that they're not being, you know, caught out for the whole amount if the deal didn't actually work out.
Brilliant. So what I've got from this so far, just recapping, is that it's easier to borrow more money for a bigger concern than it is for a smaller one, because there's less risk for the lender. Even though the sum is higher, there appears to be less risk for the lender with a bigger concern because of the vagaries that happen. Whereas with a smaller concern, just one thing that goes wrong can tip the business over and they can't pay, right?
Yes, but I mean, one has to also take the view that there's a lot of inherent security in smaller concerns as well. Bed and breakfast and guest houses, generally there's an alternative use which could revert back to residential use. So again, you know, every lender has a different view on it, really. Although there's more risk associated with a smaller concern because there's less flexibility in terms of the vagaries of the trade affecting it, generally speaking, if there is any duress, lenders can be quite flexible, I think would be the word, and understanding, because they realise it's a blip. And what we saw through the COVID period actually sort of underpins that flexibility, where an awful lot of lenders actually said, okay, well, if they're on a full repayment basis, they took interest only.
Yes.
And in many instances, they gave them a full repayment holiday. So I think it's very much keeping on the right side of the lender once the debt's been written. And, you know, when people do encounter duress, which I have to say is very few and far between, we can always help.
Yeah, yeah. And do you step in through that process then as a broker?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Essentially, we always look after our clients post-drawdown. We keep tabs on them in terms of how they're doing. And with my experience, you know, I can actually offer some, you know, sound advice, having been there and done it myself right the way through the process. Mm-hmm. But also, when it comes to raising the debt, we do everything for the prospective borrower, the purchaser. From the business plan, the marketing plan, the cash flow, the projections. So when you come to a firm like Stewart Economy and Partners, as long as you provide us with the information, we will get the deal done. We've already spoken to a lender to say A, B and C guest house, you know, turning over £200,000 net, is this achievable at 65% loan to value on a 25-year term? So as I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, we would not take on anything that we weren't 99% sure of getting the deal written by the lender.
Right, that makes sense, yes. The second thing that I took away is non-complex businesses are easier to fund than complex businesses, like if they've got a restaurant or if they've got a bar and all of the vagaries that can produce. So I think, you know, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about, oh, I need to buy a big property with a bar and a restaurant and stuff like that, what you said, Chris, is no. If the bigger the property is better, sometimes can be better, but not with the restaurant and bar. That's more complex.
It is for a new-to-trade operator. If we have an experienced operator who's experienced in food and beverage provision, then the lender would say that's fine. But if you think about it, you know, pre-COVID, wages across the board in food and beverage establishments with accommodation would be between 32.5% and 35% of net turnover. Because there's a shortage of workers, in particularly kitchen staff and chefs in particular, the overall wage account's gone up from, as I say, 32.5% now up to 45%. Then you have the issue of staff retention, because there's a huge gap in the market for good chefs. They were traditionally paid, say, £35,000 to £40,000 for a medium-sized concern, now getting paid between £55,000 and £65,000.
Interesting.
So that's the problem, you know, where you have rising inflation as well. That will affect discretionary expenditure. Wages start to rise. And we haven't even talked about utility bills yet. You know, they were typically 4% of net turnover. Now we're factoring in between 8 and 12%, and sometimes higher if they've got, you know, a business that's, you know, highly energy dependent.
Fascinating, fascinating. Okay. The third thing that I took away was if there is a supplementary income from a spouse, it's going to help the case for the purchase of somebody who's new to trade.
Correct. Mm. What we see, generally speaking, is relatively high net worth individuals coming into it. When I say high net worth, they have their own private dwelling house. They pay down the majority, if not all, of their own residential mortgage. So there's a high equity value in that. And it could be as high, you know, as £500,000 to £1 million, dependent on the, you know, the wealth of that sort of individual. They're not high net worth in the scheme of things, where they've got £2 or £3 million in the bank. But, you know, this, as I said, the average age that we, or people that we that come to us, would be about 50. So they've had their children, the children have left the nest, they've almost paid down the mortgage, if not entirely. And they say, now we want a lifestyle change, but with a business element, because we still need to earn money. Mm-hmm. So there is a bit of a halfway house with this sort of background income, whereby they will maintain that until they feel comfortable with the trade, and that they're comfortable with the debt servicing qualification as well. And the thing is, in some instances, we see where both partners have an income, because a lot of people can now work from home.
Right.
I've just actually funded a guest house in Torquay, 12 bedrooms. One of the partners was a project manager working from home. The other was a civilian employee for one of the police forces. And again, although it was remote in terms of the location, they're able to work from home. Because if you have a non-complex business, and you perhaps may well employ one staff member to assist you, you can actually maintain them, you know, sort of two income streams, which makes for a very nice serviceability comfort blanket.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a really good way to go, isn't it? If you, as you say, people are working from home. Depends how you set up your property and, you know, what your intention is. How you're going to serve your guests.
I think if you can automate it as much as possible, so online booking, keyless entry, and it depends what service level you want to provide. Some guest houses now provide a mini kitchen in the room with fridge, microwave, hob, and they don't even do breakfast. You know, they'll provide a continental breakfast in the fridge, or indeed, you know, a full English, but you'd have to cook it yourself. And then there's minimal involvement. And that works really well, because you don't have to wait up for late, you know, check-in. So people have been delayed, say, coming up from London. It's 10 o'clock at night, thinking, where are they? But if you've got keyless entry, you know, with your smartphone or whatever, then you can go to bed and see the guests in the morning.
Yes. I mean, I think that's probably another conversation. You have to kind of balance that with, you know, where's the hospitality here? If you're running a hospitality business, then there has to be some level of hospitality, and that depends on you, what you want to do as the owner, and what your guests expect. But I think that's a deeper conversation for another day. Let's get back to the money. Right. Let's get back to the money.
Money talks, as they say.
Yes, it does. Yes. Is there anything else that you would like to share? You know, if I'm, you know, for people who are listening and thinking about, you know, I really want to buy a B&B, I really want to buy a guest house or a small hotel, let's say in the Borders, in the Lake District, you know, in one of the hotspots, South Coast, North Wales or even the East Coast, what would you say to somebody who's just new to trade, completely has no clue about how this is going to work? What advice would you give, given your background?
The first piece of advice is, would you stay there? Now, if it appeals to you, in terms of location, product presentation, trading figures, that's fine. But the first question is, would you stay there? Would your friends stay there? If the answer to that is yes, then consider further. I would then do a search on all the appropriate websites, TripAdvisor and the like, to see how well regarded the concern is, for good or for bad. And bearing in mind, you'll always get some people who are never content where they stay. Will always be an issue. I think the average, the good, and the excellent reviews must outweigh the poor reviews without any doubt. And is the business viable? You know, and is it one that you can comfortably manage? If you're going to be stressed out from day one, then it's probably not for you, because that then plays into your previous comment about hospitality. You know, you're there to meet and greet your guests, make them feel welcome, to ensure you get good reviews, and that the business continues in that vein. And it's also important to understand it's no point on taking on a project unless you've got lots and lots of cash behind you, because invariably it doesn't work. You run out of time, you run out of money. And it takes a long time to establish your reputation. So my view of life is, make it easy upon yourself. Would you stay there? Look at the TripAdvisor reviews, look at the trading accounts, then speak to a suitably qualified hospitality broker like us, and then we can give you an in-principle decision within 24 hours.
Fantastic, Chris. That's really great. Thank you very much for your time and your input today. I'm sure this is going to be really helpful for many of our listeners. So thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, and thanks for hosting me. Okay.
If you'd like to get in touch with Chris McDonough from Stuart Hindley and Partners to talk about financing your new hospitality business project, or even refinancing your existing one, then you can go to his website at www.stuarthindley.co.uk. You can call on 01488 684 834, or you can email info@stuarthindley.co.uk, and I'll put all the links for you below this podcast. Thanks very much. I hope this was helpful.